Thank you. I mean, you know, with the name tags, Dick was saying that the people involved with putting this event on have name tags on. It reminded me of a funny thing that had happened at a conference I was putting on, and I think it was in England. And so we printed up, everybody had a name tag that came, and we printed up everybody's name tag in advance, and we put their first name real big so people could greet each other as they come in. So people came into the registration thing, they got their name tag, they went in, we thought everything worked great until about halfway through the first day. And this woman comes back up to the registration desk and she's all upset. We said, what's wrong? She said, my name has been misspelled. And we're thinking, okay, is that really a big deal? We said, what's your name? She said, my name is Sylvia. And sure enough, she'd been walking around all day with a name tag that said saliva.
I love that. That's good. That's a good one.
She was spitting mad, I'll tell you that. But I'm so glad that so many of you are taking advantage of this, these certificate level courses
down at least
at 25%. Our center through Colorado Christian University. It's online courses that you can take. They're not for college credit. They're just for your own growth and so forth. I'm going to talk today about science and faith, and we have a whole course on that taught by a terrific scientist who's a Christian. And we have, as I mentioned, a 40% discount just for you. If you're interested in doing that, and so you might want to see David or Jordan over here afterwards, or you can go to strobelcenter.com and put in the code BIGSKY21. We also have about 5 people here who said, I may be interested in pursuing a master's degree in apologetics and evangelism. Awesome, awesome. Maybe you, I don't know if you ever thought about that, but you can get a full master's degree, all certified online, through our center, through Colorado Christian University, in innovative evangelism, or it's how to, you know, part of that is how to do those small groups I mentioned last night. Or you can get it in cultural apologetics, dealing with issues like gender issues and abortion and cultural issues, or practical apologetics, or world religion. So. I'm just thrilled that so many people are interested in taking the next step and getting a master's degree, or you can get a bachelor's degree as well. So anyway, I'm excited about that. And I want to begin by talking about science and faith by saying that, you know, the most spectacular verse in the Bible, perhaps, in terms of a miracle, is in the very first verse of the Bible, Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Wow, really? Holy cow. God created the heavens and the earth. He created all there is. That is huge. That is huge. But can we, in the 21st century, in our age of technology and science, can we continue to believe that? That there is a supernatural creator behind our universe and all that there is? Doesn't modern science disprove God? Well, there are a lot of people who think so. One of them is Dr. Jerry Coyne. Dr. Coyne is a professor at University of Chicago. He's an atheist. And he said this. He said, science and faith are fundamentally incompatible. And science helps religion only by disproving its claims. Wow. Is that true? Well, as you know from last night, I was an atheist once like him. But not only during my investigation did I look into the evidence, the historical evidence for Jesus and who he claimed to be, but I also looked into science. Excuse me, I have a tickle in my throat. I'm going to turn this off. I also looked into science issues. I wrote a book called The Case for a Creator that looks at that. And I've come to agree with Dr. John Lennox. He's a professor at Oxford University. He said this, has science buried God? No, but it could bury atheism. So I want to do, you know, the mantra these days is follow the science, follow the science. Well, we're going to do that this morning. We're going to follow the science to a conclusion that I, when I was an atheist, found very uncomfortable. And that is, I believe the science, especially of the last 50 or 60 years, scientific discoveries in 3 particular areas point powerfully and persuasively toward the existence of a supernatural creator who just happens to match the description of the God of the Bible. And so I'm able to talk to non-believers, skeptics, and just people who are confused spiritually by starting where they're at and by building the case on scientific findings that they themselves will accept. In other words, there's nothing that I'm going to say this morning that even an atheist would not agree with. But we got to bring it to its logical conclusion. So let's follow the science this morning. And we'll begin by looking at three particular areas. And the first area is the area that has a fancy name, but it's really a fairly simple concept. The area of cosmology. That's the origin of the universe. Where did the universe come from? Now, for centuries, scientists believed that the universe was eternal. It always was there. It always existed. But thanks to persuasive philosophical arguments and scientific discoveries over the last several decades concerning the expansion of the universe, virtually all scientists are now convinced that the universe had a sudden beginning at some point in the past. In fact, the physicist Alexander Vilenkin, one of the most prominent cosmologists in the world, he's head of the Institute of Cosmology at Tufts University, said this: all the evidence we have says that the universe had a beginning. So even though you read the newspaper every once in a while, somebody's come up with a new model of the origin of the universe. Yeah. He says, regardless of that, he and two other cosmologists developed a theorem that shows that any universe that is expanding on average through its history, like ours, must have a beginning. And this is important. Even if our universe is only a tiny part of a larger multiverse, this theorem still suggests that the multiverse itself had a beginning. And this leads to an argument that's become quite popular in recent years by my friend, Dr. William Lane Craig. I mentioned him last night as a debater in our debate. Bill Craig and I were faculty members together at Houston Baptist University, and I've interviewed him for several of my books. And he's developed and expanded upon an argument concerning the existence of God that actually is traced back to medieval Islamic philosophy, of all things. But modern science has shown how relevant it is. It's a very simple argument. First premise is, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Can you think of anything that began to exist that didn't have a cause behind it? Even David Hume, the most famous skeptic of history, said, I never asserted so absurd a proposition as that anything might arise without a cause. So if something begins to exist, there's always a cause behind it. Second, we now know that the universe began to exist. Therefore, the conclusion flows from that. The universe has a cause. There is a cause behind the universe. Now ask yourself this question. What kind of a cause can bring a universe into existence? Think of what qualities must that cause have had? Well, first of all, it must itself be uncaused, because you can't have an infinite regress of causes. It must be transcendent, because it exists apart from creation. It must be immaterial or spirit, because it existed before the physical world was created. It must be eternal or timeless, because it existed before physical time came into being at the creation. It must be powerful, given the immensity of the creation event. Must be smart, given the incredible precision of the creation event. Must be personal, because he had to make the decision to create. Must be caring, because he so carefully crafted a habitat where you and I and others can flourish. And then the scientific principle of Occam's razor tells us there would be just one cause. So what do we got? Uncaused, transcendent, spirit, eternal, powerful, smart, personal, caring, unique. That is a good beginning point of a description of the God of the Bible. The Nobel Prize winning physicist Arno Penzias, who made many of the discoveries that led to this, said this: the best data we have concerning the origin of the universe are exactly what I would have predicted had I nothing to go on but the five books of Moses, the Psalms, and the Bible as a whole. So he's saying, if you just give me the Bible, I would have, by logic and by biblical teachings, have predicted exactly what science now tells us about the origin of the universe. The Bible says in Psalm 102, verse 25, "In the beginning, you, God, laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands." Now, I believe that cosmology goes a long way toward establishing the existence of a creator, but there have been objections that have been raised. One objection is, and this is a very popular one, it's like, oh, whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore there must be a cause behind the universe. Well, who caused God? Who created God? And that's usually followed by na-na-na-na-na-na. Who caused God? And the answer to that is nobody. Nobody created God. The argument is not whatever exists has a cause. The argument is whatever begins to exist has a cause. God, by definition, is eternal. He never began to exist. He's always existed. Before he created the universe, time itself, physical time, did not even exist. There was just timelessness. And by the way, atheists shouldn't have a problem with something being eternal, because they maintain for, you know, many years that the evidence was that the universe is eternal. So they had no problem with the idea that the universe was eternal until they were disproven by the evidence. Scientists now are unanimous in saying the universe began to exist, and that means we need to have a cause to explain it. Second objection was raised by Stephen Hawking in his book, The Grand Design. He said this, listen to this carefully. This is a bizarre quote. You know Stephen Hawking, famous theoretical physicist. He said, "Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing." Did you get that? Because there's such a thing as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. But this simply postpones creation by one stage. In other words, if gravity caused the universe to pop into existence from nothing, where did gravity come from? Who made it? Who put it there? We still need a creator. So Hawking's theory fails to do away with God. On the contrary, the beginning of the universe points toward a creator. So I think cosmology, I mean, this is powerful stuff. And I just got to know a woman through Twitter. And I interviewed her for my new book, The Case for Heaven. But she was an atheist, grew up with atheist parents in Canada, I believe it was. Strong, staunch atheist. She goes to the University of Texas at Austin, which is one of the most liberal universities in the world, to study cosmology and to study astrophysics. That's what she wanted to do. Well, she was shocked when two of her professors were Christians. And she listened to them and how this evidence points toward the existence of God. And then she began studying the origin of the universe. And she said, there is no other conclusion other than there is a supernatural cause, a creator, behind the creation of the universe. And she became a Christian, and now I understand she's writing a book on science and faith. But this happens so often. People who really do follow the science end up in the kingdom of God, more often than not. The second area I want to talk about is physics. Physics. One of the most striking discoveries of modern science is that the quantities and constants of physics, in other words, the numbers that govern the operation of the universe, conspire in an absolutely unexpected way, an extraordinary way, to make the universe habitable for life. In other words, the universe itself is finely tuned on a razor's edge so that life can exist. So much so that it is much better explained by being the work of a creator than by saying, oh, it's just happenstance, it's just chance. We'll see that that doesn't work. It's like this. If you were to go out, now here in Montana, I suppose at night in the summers, when you look up at the sky, I bet you can see the stars. I bet it's beautiful. We have so much glare in the city that you can't see the stars so much. So I bet if you're camping here in Montana, imagine going out in the middle of the night looking up at the sky, but you don't see the stars. You know what you see? About 100 giant dials in the sky. And each of these dials can be calibrated to any one of billions, perhaps trillions of settings. But each one of these 100 dials in the sky happens to be exactly set at the precise location so that life can exist. That, friends, is a picture of what modern physics tells us about our world. I'll give you an example. The force of gravity, we mentioned that earlier. We all know what gravity is, right? Well, gravity happens to be finely tuned to an incomprehensible degree so that life can exist. I'll illustrate it this way. Imagine a dial, but you ever seen a linear dial? Just like a ruler. Imagine, say, a ruler across the entire known universe, 15 billion light years. A ruler broken down in 1-inch increments. That represents the plausible range along which gravity could have been set at any point. And yet, the force of gravity is calibrated and set at the exact right place on that ruler so that life can exist. How precise is it? If you were to change the force of gravity 1 inch compared to the 15 billion light year width of the universe, intelligent life would be impossible anywhere in the universe. It's staggering. How do you explain it? Is that a happenstance? Is that a coincidence? I don't think that's a good explanation. There are about 50 to 100 examples of this kind of precision in physics that modern science has uncovered just over the last 50 or 60 years. So this is pretty recent stuff. So much requires exact, precise calibration so that life can exist. I'll give you another example. There's something called the cosmological constant. Sounds fancy, but all it means is it's the energy density of space. And what you need to know about the cosmological constant is it has to be balanced on a razor's edge for life to exist. If the number were large and positive, the universe would never form. If it were large and negative, the universe would collapse upon itself. So it has to be exactly right so that life can exist. How precise is it? Scientists have determined that the cosmological constant is fine-tuned to one part in 100 million, billion, 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 billion. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. This would be like going to the moon and throwing a dart at planet Earth and hitting a predetermined bullseye 1,000th of an inch in diameter. And yet, it's set at the exact right place so that life can exist. Now, if you just add just those two, the force of gravity and the cosmological constant, just add those two dimensions together, the fine tuning is to a precision of one part in 100 million, trillion, 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 trillion. I mean, that is equal to one atom in the entire known universe. It just defies any other explanation other than this is intentional. Scientists look at odds like that and they say, oh, there's a way to summarize what the odds are that can happen by chance. The odds are zero. It ain't going to happen. I interviewed one physicist. He said, yeah, you look at the numbers, it ain't going to happen by chance. And so how do I do with that? There's a few others. The odds against the initial conditions being suitable for the formation of stars is a 1 followed by 1,000 billion billion zeros. Unbelievable. There's a strong nuclear force. A strong nuclear force is what binds the nucleus of atoms together. If you decrease the strong nuclear force by just one part in 10,000 billion 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 billion, all we would have in the universe would be hydrogen. No life would be possible. Or my favorite, the ratio of the electromagnetic force to the gravitational force. This is fine-tuned to one part in 10,000 trillion, trillion, trillion. Now, an astrophysicist said, I got to put that into context for you. I got to illustrate that so you can imagine, you can grasp how big of a number that is. So you get that, okay, this is important. If this isn't right, you don't exist. The universe doesn't exist. And yet it's fine-tuned to one part in 10,000 trillion, trillion, trillion. This would be like If you covered all of North America with dimes. So all of North America is covered, but it goes all, the dimes are piled up 280,000 miles to the moon. So can you picture that? The size of North America, filled with so many dimes, they pile up 280,000 miles to the moon. Now picture a billion North Americas, all of them with dimes piled up to the moon. Now, choose one dime at random and spray paint it red and then blindfold someone. And let that person travel among the billion North Americas, all these dimes piled 280,000 miles high, and reach in and pick out one dime. What are the mathematical odds it would be the one spray painted red? The same odds that the electromagnetic force would be and the gravitational force would be fine-tuned to the degree to which they are. It's just unbelievable, the precision of our universe. It caused the astrophysicist Rodney Holder to say, the way the universe exhibits an ordered structure, which is open to science to investigate, points to a mind behind it. Or Vista Kariakowski, she was the president of the Association of Women in Science. She's a former professor of physics at MIT. She said the exquisite order displayed by our scientific understanding of the physical world calls for the divine. In other words, she looks at the evidence of cosmology and physics and says, the only conclusion I can come to as a physicist at MIT, as the president of the largest association of women in science in the country, the only conclusion I can draw is there has to be a creator behind it. This stuff doesn't happen by chance. It ain't gonna happen by chance. And there's no other mechanism that would force it to happen. Now, it's interesting, I mentioned last night Christopher Hitchens, one of the top four atheists in the world before his passing. He said that the fine-tuning argument is the best argument that theists, believers in God, have for the existence of God. So how do atheists get around this? What loophole can they find? Well, here's the loophole they've come up with. They say that what if there's actually an infinite number of universes? They're invisible. We can't see them. We have no evidence that they exist. But let's imagine there's an infinite number of universes. If that were true, if you were to spin the dials randomly in an infinite number of universes, sooner or later, one of them is going to come up with the right numbers, and that happens to be our universe, and that's why we're here to talk about it. That's their best argument. That's basically their only argument against this kind of evidence. Well, here's the problem with that. There is no physical evidence that there is an infinite number of invisible universes that we can't see or ever know about. In fact, one physicist told me the existence of a multiple universes, provides further evidence for a creator. I said, how? He said, well, Lee, imagine a bread-making machine. How many of you have a bread-making machine? That used to be so popular. Why don't we get one of those? We used to have one. Remember that? We used to make the bread. It was so good. Could you write that down? Could we get one? That was delicious. I'm sorry. Anyway, imagine a bread-making machine. Now, to get an edible loaf of bread, you have to have a well-designed machine with the right circuitry, the right heating element, the right timer, and so forth. You have to add the ingredients in the right order, in the right proportions. Otherwise, you don't get an edible loaf of bread. You get a hockey puck. Now, he said, Lee, a universe is far more complicated than a loaf of bread. He said, if it takes a finely tuned mechanism and the right ingredients to produce a loaf of bread, then it requires a finely tuned mechanism and process to produce multiple universes, and such a finely tuned mechanism points toward a creator. The famous Oxford philosopher Richard Swinburne was blunt. He said, to postulate a trillion, trillion other universes rather than one God in order to explain the orderliness of our universe seems the height of irrationality. Now, it's interesting, you know, people tell you, follow the science. Where is the science that points toward an invisible number of infinite universes? I mean, there's no science that supports that. There's some theories. But there is no physical science whatsoever. And then in principle, if these other universes did exist, in principle, we would never be able to visit them or to have any evidence of them. So I think, friends, personally, if all I had was the evidence of cosmology and physics, following the science, I would be forced to conclude there is a supernatural creator. Just those two areas. But I'm going to mention one other area that we've learned so much about just in the last half century, and that is DNA, biological information. You may remember when scientists completed the mapping of the human genome. This is the chemical instructions inside every cell that contain, in a sense, the blueprint for life. And when, by the way, it was an evangelical Christian who led the team that mapped the human genome. And when it was announced, President Clinton, who was president at the time, said something exactly right. He said, "Today, we are learning the language in which God created life." And that's exactly right. Today, we are learning the language in which God created life. DNA is quite literally language. I don't mean figuratively, I don't mean metaphorically. I mean, it's quite literally language. Your body has 100 trillion cells. If you were to open one cell at random and you'd see the famous double helix of DNA and you were to unwind the DNA from one cell, it would be 6 feet tall. And embedded in that, encoded in that, would be a four-letter chemical alphabet that spells out the precise assembly instructions for all of the proteins out of which your body is made. I mean, DNA, friends, is the most efficient information storage system in the universe. If you had one teaspoon of DNA, imagine peanut butter. You know, you dip a teaspoon into peanut butter. Imagine you had a jar of peanut butter, but it wasn't peanut butter, it was pure DNA. And you dipped in a teaspoon. You would be able, in that teaspoon, to hold all of the information that's needed to build all of the proteins for all of the 1,000 million species of organisms that have ever existed on planet Earth and still have room left over for all of the information on every book ever written in one teaspoon of DNA. How does DNA point toward a creator? How many of you saw a movie a number of years ago? I'm not expecting a big response, by the way, to this. How many of you saw a movie called Contact with Jodie Foster? You saw it? Yeah. Oh, quite a few. It was a good movie, wasn't it? I kind of liked it. It was good. Contact was a movie based on a book by an atheist scientist named Carl Sagan. And here's the plot of the movie. And part of it is based on reality. Here's the part that's based on reality. The movie says that scientists have an array of radio telescopes scanning the skies, looking for signs of intelligent life. Don't you wish they would scan Washington, D.C.? But this is the true part. Scientists have these radio telescopes. They're scanning the skies, looking for intelligent life. What are they looking for? Some evidence that life exists. But all they get, and this is true virtually the entire time the science has been doing this, what they basically get is static. It's just the random background noise of the universe. So that's the true part. Although lately there have been some micro radio bursts that are they're caused by nature as well as we can determine. So all they're getting in these radio telescopes is static, the random background noise of the universe. There's no evidence in that there's intelligent life. But in the movie, and here's the fictional part, in the movie they begin to receive prime numbers. Prime numbers are numbers divisible only by the number one or by themselves. And so they're getting numbers transmitted to them. And scientists reason it's too improbable that there would be some natural cause You know, the static somehow organizing itself into a string of prime numbers. That just doesn't make sense. There must be an intelligence behind it. If we're getting prime numbers, there must be an intelligence behind it. Why? This is not disorganized static. It's a message with content. A message with content. And from that, they conclude in the movie, there must be an intelligence out there. In fact, Carl Sagan, the atheist who was behind this, said, quote, "The receipt of a single message from space would be enough to know there's an intelligence out there." One sentence. If our radio telescopes all of a sudden receive one sentence, one word from space, we would know there has to be an intelligence behind it, because the random noise of the universe is not going to organize itself into information. Well, friends, what is DNA? It's a message with content. It is information. It is language. Just like English uses a 26-character alphabet to spell out words, DNA uses a 4-letter chemical alphabet. In fact, get this, inside every cell in your body is as many words as in nearly 200 years of the Sunday New York Times. And if you were to try to read the genetic code aloud, and you read it at the rate of 3 letters a second, night and day, you know how long it would take you to read the genetic code in just one cell in your body? 31 years. Night and day, 3 characters a second. Take you 31 years just to read the information, the code, inside every cell in your body. It's the specific, detailed instructions for how to build every protein that you are made out of. Where in the world did that come from? If a single message from space would be enough for us to conclude there must be an intelligence behind it, what about this vast storehouse of information inside every cell in our body? You see, nature by itself can produce patterns. We see patterns in nature. I live down in Houston, Texas. If we go down to Galveston and the Gulf of Mexico, and you walk along the beach at dawn, and in the wet sand of the beach, you see ripple marks. And it is logical to conclude that that pattern, those ripple marks, were made by the action of the waves. Totally logical. But if you're walking down the beach and in the wet sand you see John loves Mary with a heart around it and an arrow through it, you wouldn't say, oh, the waves created that. Why? Because it's information. And whenever we see information anywhere, this is universal, whenever we see information, whether it's a writing on a cave wall, whether it's a computer code, whether it's a newspaper article, whether it's a blog, whenever we see information, there is always an intelligence behind it. Well, King David said this in Psalm 139. He said, "For you, God, created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." And there is plenty of evidence, friends, from 21st century cosmology, physics, and the study of biological information, or DNA, that if we follow the science, we will conclude there is an intelligent designer, there is a creator behind it, and he matches the description of the God of the Bible. And what I love about sharing this with non-believers is there is nothing I have said that they could disagree with in terms of the evidence. They have to concede that. I don't have to argue them into some other position. I just have to say, look, you already accept all of this. Just follow the evidence where it points. Now, one of the world's leading experts on the molecular world is a guy I've come to know in Houston, Texas. He's a professor at Rice University. He's one of the 50 most influential scientists and most quoted scientists in the world. His name is James Tour. James Tour builds molecular machines for a living. He's a nanoscientist. They literally build little molecular trucks with little molecular engines. Someday, they're going to build a molecular computer. That's the goal. And I asked him one day, because he has hundreds of U.S. patents on all these molecular machines he's built, just one molecule at a time, one atom at a time. And I said to him, I said, Jim, do you make a lot of money from these patents? He said, no. He said, you know, technology isn't there yet to really do anything with these molecular machines. Not very helpful to have a molecular truck you can't even see. But he said, my great-grandkids are going to be trillionaires. I love that. But anyway, this is what he told me. He said, Lee, I stand in awe of God because of what he has done through his creation. He said, only a rookie who knows nothing about science would say that science takes away from faith. He said, if you really study science, it will bring you closer to God. And I believe that's true. And it's not just for Christians who have a predisposition to believe in a supernatural creator. One of the, if not the most prominent philosophical atheists of the 20th century, Anthony Flew, from England, he was not just an atheist. He wrote the book called The Presumption of Atheism. He wrote, like, I don't know, 20 books on atheism. He taught on atheism at universities around the world. He was considered maybe the greatest philosophical atheist of the 20th century. And of course, he didn't believe there was a creator. Of course, he didn't believe that there was a God. And so one day, I was living in California, and I was sitting outside in the morning looking at the New York Times. And I see an article on the front page of the New York Times. And you know what it said? Newsflash. Anthony Flew, the most famous philosophical atheist of the 20th century, now says, oops, I was wrong. There is a God. And this article says Anthony Flew reversed his position based on following the evidence of science and came to believe in a creator. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, I'm a skeptic by nature. I didn't believe the article in the New York Times. I just didn't believe it. I said, it's got to be a mistake. This has got to be overblown. So I tracked down Anthony Flew. And I sat him in a chair. And I said, Dr. Flew, you're the most famous philosophical atheist of my lifetime. And you're telling me, oops, I was wrong? What in the world changed your mind? And he looked at me, and I'll never forget, he said, Lee, for one thing, it's the integrated complexity of the biological world. The kind of stuff we were just talking about with DNA. And Anthony Flew abandoned his atheism as a result. And he ended up co-authoring a book called There Is a God. And in that book, he wrote this. I now believe that the universe was brought into existence by an infinite intelligence. I believe that this universe's intricate laws, by the way, that's cosmology that we talked about. I believe that this universe's intricate laws manifest what scientists have called the mind of God. I believe that life and reproduction originate in a divine source. Why do I believe this? Given that I have expounded and defended atheism for more than half a century, the short answer is this. This is the world picture as I see it that has emerged from modern science. So here you have one of the greatest atheists who's ever lived, who said, I follow the science. And he names those exact areas that we talked about, cosmology, physics, biology, that is DNA, that convinced him that there is a creator. And I came to the same conclusion. Plus, there's other areas that I looked at as well. If you read my book on the case for a creator, I deal with the origin of human consciousness, another problem that atheists can't figure out how to answer. And I believe, in the end, that Romans 1, verse 20 is right when it says, for ever since the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky. Through everything God made, they can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature. So they have no excuse for not knowing God. So does science disprove the existence of a supernatural creator who matches the description of the God of the Bible? No, I believe science points powerfully and persuasively toward his existence. And, you know, if you want more on this, my book, Case for Creator, contains a lot. There's a new book out by Dr. Stephen Meyer, who has a PhD from Cambridge, called The Return of the God Hypothesis. And he actually looks at these same areas and some others and makes powerful arguments for the existence of a supernatural creator. Our course, we have a certificate level course you can take. And Dr. Melissa Travis teaches that course. Melissa Travis is a scientist who has a PhD in science and faith. And if you want to learn more about this kind of stuff, really study it at your own pace online, sign up for one of our certificate courses. She'd love to have you in her class. And if you want to get a master's degree in science and faith, we'll do that too. I just believe we got to get the word out on this stuff. A lot of these discoveries that I've talked about were just made in the last 40 to 60 years. This is not stuff that people have known. Our parents didn't know much of this stuff. But now, the more we look at these areas of science and others, I think the more confidence it gives us that our faith in God is well placed. So let me pray, and we can end this session.
Let me interrupt you for a minute. By now, you've figured out we're very disorganized. And so everything happens on the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
So on the spur of the moment, before you pray, I've asked our friends from Colorado Christian to come over and be with you for a minute.
Yeah.
Will you guys talk about what you're doing at CCU?
Sure, sure. This is Jordan, and this is David.
Hello.
Colorado Christian University. Let me give it to Jordan. Jordan is head of partnerships at CCU. And tell them what we're doing.
Well, good morning, Billings. I'm a native, by the way. Throw that out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
A ton of family here in Billings. I'm going to go show my late grandmother's house that she lived in forever before we leave today. But what we're here today to really expose you to is really is following Lee's leadership here at the Strobel Center. And through these courses that have been collaborated on by some of the world's finest people and believers, that we are here to communicate that we exist, that we want to partner with your church, that we want to partner with you, and we want to encourage you to really take advantage of the financial stewardship opportunities that we have at CCU, the degrees that are offered. I mean, it's not every day that we get to, well, it is, I guess, for Dave and I almost every day we get to be with Lee, but to be able to learn from the world's best apologists, the people who have studied this far more detail than we have. But I guess I will encourage you that I have started my first certificate finally this past Monday.
Oh, really?
I did.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, awesome. Which one?
Cultural engagement.
Awesome.
And then I'm going to do some innovative evangelism.
Cool.
So we are here to really communicate that it's Big Sky 21. That if you go to thestrobelcenter.com, you scroll down and you'll see the continuing education certificates. Because not everyone needs a degree in apologetics. But I absolutely firmly believe that as we are on our path, and really the beginning stages, that you'll be the first few of millions of Christians that will have taken these courses. That we can confidently and confidently defend our faith in a culture that is faced with the opposite of truth. That people are everywhere. When we travel in airports, we can see people who don't know Jesus. But we get to share our faith and be that stronger light and brighter, or stronger salt and brighter light to those around us. So I absolutely encourage you to just write that quote down. It is transformative. I've done 3 weeks of work in the last 4 days of my certificate because I'm a super geek and I love to learn. When I'm interested in something, I'm going to learn it. And they're designed where you can really take your time and self-paced. You're not writing academic papers. It's about applied apologetics. how do we share our faith confidently with our neighbor down the street that we've known for 25 years, that we know doesn't know Jesus, but how do we have that conversation with them? And that's the important piece that I've seen in churches around the country that we travel to, and the communities that we live in. And this community has a special place in my heart, because it is because of this community that I am a follower of Christ. It's because of the strong generational faith of my great-grandparents, my grandparents, and my parents. And even when I walked away from my faith, they were there to help support me and bring me back to the truth. So I can stand here on stage with Lee Strobel today to say, don't wait. Take advantage, spread the word, be equipped, and be stronger soul and brighter light.
Wait, stop.
That's awesome. By the way, there is a time limit to the 40% off. It's through what?
November 9th.
So November 9th is next week. So you kind of have to decide if you want that 40% off pretty quick.
Don't go anywhere. Lee, you alluded to the fact last night that you were kind of shifting gears from maybe just writing books, to what you're doing now. Tell us about that a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I could continue to write books. I only write books I believe God is putting on my heart to write. And unless I feel a strong impulse to do another book, you know, my book on heaven may be my last book. I don't know. But what I do know is I want to leave a legacy. I want to impact the world for Christ. And I've been partnering with Colorado Christian, which is an awesome school with godly leadership and godly professors. By partnering with them, I believe we can impact churches all over the land. We've got a 6-stage process we've developed over the last 20 years that if any church applies this 6-stage process, their church will explode evangelistically. One of those stages is that every church needs to have either a volunteer or a full-time or a part-time person in charge of evangelism. Most churches don't have anybody in charge. And if a name isn't attached to something in a church, it'll never get done. The senior pastor can't do it all. So he needs someone, a volunteer, part-time, full-time, to lead the evangelistic charge in local churches. We want to train 10, 20,000 people who will be those volunteers, those point leaders, full-time, part-time, in local churches. I got a call from a church consultant saying, I have 3 major churches who today want to hire an evangelism point person. Where do I find them? Well, we're creating them. And it's funny, how many of you know what Duck Dynasty is, the Duck Dynasty guys? Yeah, so Willie Robertson, who's kind of the brains behind it, Willie Robertson became a friend of mine, and he is an evangelist by nature. And he heard me talk about the fact that every church needs a volunteer, full-time, or part-time point leader that we're gonna train to lead the charge and to reach your community with the gospel. And he got all excited. So he went to his local church in West Monroe, Louisiana, and said to the pastor, I want to be the volunteer point leader for evangelism at our church. And the pastor said, okay, groovy, let's do it. He texted me, if I had my cell phone, I'd find the text and read it to you. He texted me at the end of March, that's the first 3 months of the year, and he was so giddy. He said, Lee, we baptized like 100 people so far this year. We more people than all the previous year in the first 3 months. He said, our church is alive evangelistically. People are coming to faith right and left. This is so exciting. I'm so excited about this. And then I get this text, and then the next text comes in about an hour later, and he says, just baptized 4 more. This is awesome. I mean, what else are we going to do, friends? Today, it takes 87 church members working 1 year to lead one person to faith. That is a formula for the demise of the local church. 2/3 of American churches are plateaued or declining. 10 churches close their doors permanently every day in America. We've got to reach our communities with the gospel. That's what our center is about. We're about evangelism, sharing the gospel, but apologetics, defending the gospel. Because as a friend of mine says, evangelism in the 21st century is spelled apologetics. You can't have one without the other. So we're just very excited. And, you know, some of you young people, you're looking for a ministry opportunity, a ministry career. You could be a point leader of a local church. And, you know.
You know,
And I'm going to tag on to that, because one of the things I was going to ask you to mention what Luis Palau had told you before he passed.
Yeah.
Because I find that, I actually think about that, I'm reading his book, A Life on Fire.
Yeah.
And it is a, it gives me, I can feel the spirit moving in me, because it gives me goosebumps when, as I read that book. But one of the things it takes is courage. And I've been in higher ed for many years now. And I can tell you that there are three things that keep us from acting in many things in life, but especially in equipping ourselves through education. And it is time, our ability to do it with our busy lives that we have, money, which is a limited resource, but it's God's money and He'll make it happen, and fear that we are not to operate out of. We have the Holy Spirit. We have the truth and the power and love of Jesus Christ in us. Those three things, if we can get past those, we can change people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah, Luis Palau, as you probably know, is one of the greatest evangelists of history. He shared his faith with 1 billion people during his life through his festivals and crusades and things that he would do around the world. And he was dying of stage 4 cancer, knew he was going to die. And I'm writing a book on the case for heaven. So I said, Luis, can I come out and spend the day with you and talk to you about someone who's about to go to heaven and what your perspective is? And so I went to his home and I spent the day with Luis and his wife, Pat. And as Jordan alluded to, at one point in our conversation, he looked at me and he said, Lee, when all is said and done, when you get to the end of your life, you will never regret being courageous for Christ. And this is from a man at the end of his life who looked back in his life with no sense of regret. And I think, you know, all of us have a role to be salt and light. Some of us will feel called into that as a ministry. And so you're going to want a credential, you're going to want some training. Let us help you train you. Let us help you get trained so that you're prepared. That's the legacy I hope to leave, because I want to see this trend in America turned around. I don't see how we change the culture of our nation apart from Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Who changes hearts other than Jesus? I look at my own life, my morality and character, absolutely transformed by Jesus Christ. I have a friend who was a racist. He was lived in the South during segregation. He became a member of the Ku Klux Klan. He hated people of color. One day he got 29 sticks of dynamite together and went to the home of a civil rights leader to blow his house up and to kill him and his children. Well, the FBI infiltrated the KKK. They knew he was coming. There was a shootout. His accomplice was killed. My friend Tom shot a police officer 4 times. Fortunately, the guy lived. Tom was wounded. He was sent to prison. He became a stronger racist in prison, because he's reading all this racist literature. What changed Tom Terrance? His grandmother gave him a Bible.
Yeah.
And he read the Bible and said, oh, wait, it says love your neighbor. It doesn't have an exclusion there for people of different colors. I need to love my neighbor. And Tom Terrance not only became a Christian in prison, but then became an ordained minister. And when he was finally released, he became the pastor of a multiracial church in Washington, D.C., and president of the C.S. Lewis Foundation. God transformed him. We're looking, how do we heal our country? I think the answer is Jesus. Jesus changes our values. Jesus changes our characters. Jesus changes our attitudes. And so I just think if we're going to rescue this country, it's going to have to be a spiritual awakening. And that's what our center is trying to stoke.
Lee, you know that old saying, can anything good come out of Missoula?
That's in the Bible somewhere.
I am with you.
It's living
like
proof.
I say that was Missoula before it's Missoula. Okay? I got some
one,
hairs.
One more thing, of course, I do nothing without a motive. So my granddaughter's probably going to go to CCU next fall from Kearney.
Awesome.
So we'll be expecting a really big
scholarship.
Well, I know a guy. We, you know, that's just, we
That's right. He knows people.
That's one thing. I actually just did a talk about networking.
I feel like I don't need the mic sometimes. But, you know, it's about those relationships. And one of those things that I heard discussed last night was the relationships that we're building that actually make a difference. Yeah. And that's what Dave and I get paid to do, thankfully. It's actually a dream that we get to be paid and travel the country and meet people. The Unexpected Adventure is one of my favorite books.
It's a good one.
Because we get to meet thousands of people, and we never know how that seed will be received. But I will tell you that it's amazing when we get emails or we get calls from somebody that says, thank you so much for giving me the courage or the encouragement to actually take the step to make a phone call.
Yeah. By the way, if you're a pastor, your church can partner.
Thank you
talk
so much,
to Jordan.
Dan.
Your church can partner with CCU. It costs you nothing.
Zero.
But what did their congregation get? Like 20% discount?
20% on undergrad and 10% on grad and our online programs.
So you get this huge discount, plus in addition to all the scholarships and so forth. So it's just, yeah, we'd like to partner with you. So just talk to Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get out here.
Awesome. Thanks. You guys are great.
Thanks, Dick.
Thank you, Dick.
Go ahead.